You're listening to the Dual Shockers Shockcast. This is episode 138. We have a full house this evening. Five people, not including Giuseppe, though. It's kind of sad about that, but he's out with a little cold. He sends his regards. Today I'm joined by a huge cast of characters from the Dual Shockers website. We have Alyssa James.
Hey, guys.
Masood House.
Yo!
George or Jorge.
Hi there.
And Kenneth Richardson.
Salutations.
Is this your first time, Ken?
No. I think the last one I was on was maybe 30 or 40 something. I don't know. It's been really, really long.
This is the first time that I've heard you on the Shockcast.
It's been a long time.
It has to have been. So, Ken, you've got the new releases for us?
I do.
All right, let's hear it.
We've got Mario and Luigi Dream Team for the 3DS, Hammer Watch for the PC, Payday 2 on a bunch of platforms, Europa Universalis 4 for PC and Linux, DuckTales Remastered also on a bunch of platforms, Angry Birds Trilogy on the Wii U, Thunderwolves, Payday 2 Collector's Edition, Mars Warlogs, Break Quest Extra Evolution Freemium, Fruit Ninja coming to the Vita, Open Me also on the Vita, Amen, Gone Home, Space Hawk, Worms Clan Wars, and Crazy Chicken Pirates 3D.
Mine. That one's mine.
there's always going to be at least, you know, one or two clunkers, so. What do you guys pick for this week?
For me, I would probably go with DuckTales Remastered.
Sweet.
I definitely have to go with Payday 2. Been, like, waiting for that for a while. Loving all the new heisty stuff that they've been talking about. Definitely better than the first one, it seems.
Sweet.
Jorge? George?
I guess, you know, I'll be the indie snob still and go with Gone Home.
I have heard a lot of good things about it, yeah.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of good buzz around this game. Yeah, you come back to an empty house and you have to figure out what the hell happened to your family, and there's really no direction. It's just like, hey, explore your own house and see what happened. So
I do that on like a daily basis. You know, it's like walk in, the lights are off. It's like, what happened? Cats looking at me.
Are you just consistently abandoned at home?
Yeah. My dog is like, you shouldn't have come back. Ken, what do you pick for this week?
I'm about a dozen hours into it. I'm going to go with Mario and Luigi Dream Team.
Okay.
Oh, how is it?
It's pretty fun, you know, kind of cutesy. Some of the dialogue is really, really, like, seriously funny.
Yeah.
Okay, so far, pretty good, I guess.
I'm going to go with DuckTales.
Awesome.
I'm going to go with DuckTales. And it's like, I'm sorry. I've read some reviews, and I'm wondering if some of the people who have played this game forgot that this is based on a 90s platformer.
I know! like Scrooge McDuck is a horrible person. It's like, really?
Yeah, it's like, it's just more like, you know, they're talking about how the game is, like, too hard, or the controls are weird. It's like,
yeah!
Dude, the game's been recreated. It just looks different, but it's the same game. They didn't want to, like, you know, bastardize it.
Yeah, some of the reviews have been really harsh.
Yeah.
You can't handle hard games anymore. Oh, my God.
I want to know when these reviewers were born.
And it's crazy with the harsh scores, because, honestly, this is one of the best-looking remakes I've
it
seen.
Is.
Yeah.
It's excellent.
This and Mickey Mouse, Castle of Illusion. When that is coming out, but I played a little bit of that at E3, and that was another remake where it's like, holy shit, this is really fun.
They went a step further though with the Mickey Mouse one, because I haven't really been keeping up with DuckTales, but I remember Mickey Mouse, they introduced some new things too, like, you know, those 2.5D sections, or there's like a 3D section for boss battles, I think.
It's 2.5.
Like
it's 2.5.
Right.
Yeah. I think, there might be 3D, I don't remember, but definitely there's two two-dimension and 2.5 dimensions. But yeah, so, I mean, it's interesting that we're going to start off talking about reviews, because that was just one thing that popped in my head. I read those reviews and I couldn't. So there was a story that went up on the DualShocker's website recently. It was about Hideki Kamiya.
Kamiya,
I'm sorry. It's the Hispanic in me. I just have to pronounce his name. So he tweeted out that for foreign gamers, he feels that games that sell and don't sell, like that tends to be a hot topic, and he's kind of wondering why people like on our side care so much about reviews and sales instead of just kind of judging the game on its quality. And I mean, I'll start off by saying it's like, what?
No, I just have to cut in for a second. Like, you're referring back to the article I recently did on DualShockers. Isn't it Capcom who told us that they were going to base their next project on sales for a game that was like, I mean, for a really half-assed HD remaster that's 20 years old? Like, they're the ones who told us that. We were the ones in the West saying, hey, give us Darkstalkers. We love it. You know, we do this all the time. And they're always the ones saying, hey, well, we're going to, like, wait and see what's going on here. You know, prove... They're the ones who told us to put our $20, put our bills in the air, you know, during Comic-Con, what was it, a year or two ago, to prove we wanted something. So I just want to throw that out there for that, I mean, you know, kind
same,
of BS.
It's the same thing like Nintendo's doing with like Earthbound. You know, they're finally re-releasing it, and they're like, all right, if you want, this will be a fun experiment. How much are people willing to pay for a remake of a classic title that, you know, kind of a niche kind of following?
Already.
And yeah, and they'll you know, and I guess they'll gauge it from there. It's like, hey, is this something we want to pursue more?
Buy our 500-year-old game and prove that you want a new one.
I mentioned sales, and you guys saw blood. Jesus Christ.
I was
like, wait, I'm just going to let him go. No. This is about I mean, obviously, that's a big issue, too. But no, the article that I was referring to was one that Giuseppe wrote, where this Hideki Kamiya tweeted out that he felt that the fans, you know, it's the thing you see on a place like the IGN comments. You post up an article, and all of a sudden there's just a huge flame war about like sales. Now, like, oh, this game is better because it sold like 2 million copies, and that game's a piece of shit. And I mean, I've seen this with other things too, with films and TVs, and people kind of put a lot more credence to how much it sells or what the box office is or whatever subject you're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
can I ask a question? Was this more directed to the consumers or toward the Western developers?
No, he was directing it towards the consumers.
Yeah.
Because I'd argue that this is, not like, you know, at least to answer your point, I'd argue that this is more a Western development issue because, again, I mean, you know, we're constantly as consumers saying, hey, we want this, you know, franchise to continue, and we'll be told by developers, well, I'm sorry, but it only made 1 million, you know, that's not good enough. You know, maybe if it did 1.5, we would have continued on, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what you guys feel, but that's what I've been noticing the last, like, especially the last year or two. Every time we want something to continue, it's like, well, this, you know, we wanted 3 million, not 2.6, so we're going to have to cut this off for the time being. Sorry, guys. You know, even though you guys, you know, have gotten a petition of 10 million people and have actually put in your own money, no, we're not really going to continue this, you know?
So, yeah, I think that... go ahead.
No, I'm just saying it comes down to, you know, I think we were talking... I think that you're referring to, what was it, Tomb Raider, where it's like, yeah, we sold 1.5 million copies. We just...
Nah, that's not good.
We just made a profit. And I think that comes from a development side where they don't want to take risks, so it's like we have to go with something AAA or something that we know has a history. You know, it's kind of like the whole Call of Duty or kind of Assassin's Creed talk again, where it's like, yeah, we kind of get tired of it, but, you know, Ubisoft is saying, hey, look, people keep buying this shit, so we're going to keep making it. So unless you prove otherwise, this is kind of our safe, you know, this is kind of like our safe plan. And, you know, you need, and I think, you know, Activision needs a game like a Call of Duty to sell 1 billion copies just so maybe they can try newer things or try a new IP. Like, you know, EA tried it a while back, and that's how we got to see games like Mirror's Edge, even though no one bought Mirror's Edge, but you could see that they were willing to take a risk. But when the game does come out, and it's like, look, we did it, we took a risk, stop complaining about original IPs, you didn't buy this, so leave us alone about Mirror's Edge. Yeah, like, leave us alone. Yeah, well, Dead Space worked out. But
Jorge, you know, you mentioned Dave's, like, ultra-favorite game of this generation, right?
Yeah, and then what I was going to mention was that they're they're more or less taking a risk now because they're making a sequel for a game that only sold 2 million copies across like half a dozen platforms. So it was like really spread out. So just to clarify with what you guys are saying, are you implying now that the attitude that publishers have, because really what you're talking, when it comes to sales, that's more like the publishers. Are you kind of inferring that the publishers have kind of like indoctrinated, if you will, this argument among the consumer where like a game is good because it sells well, not because of anything else, like not because of any other quality, that it needs to sell well for it to really be kind of revered?
I'd like to keep defending the consumer by saying I don't really think I've ever seen that conversation come up from the consumer side of things or from gamer side of things. Like I really don't think I've seen a lot of people going on message board. At least, you know, I'm not that guy who like, you know, lurks in the message boards or anything, but I don't think I've really seen a ton of people saying, "Oh my god, I hate this game because like it sold too little." I still think that is from the publisher side of things, as far as I've seen.
It's how they're justifying their decisions to either continuing a franchise, not continuing a franchise. It seems to be a go-to excuse where it's like, look, they're just not profitable for us.
And like Corey said, is not necessarily wrong because, you know whether you play games, you know, for gaming or whether you're a developer or a publisher who's selling them, this is a business, and you know it is kind of hard to like make something go if you don't have money. But I don't really think that can be painted against the consumer at all, as far as I've seen.
Right. I wanted to mention something. It's more on the review side. I think in terms of sales, I do agree with you guys. I think that tends to be more of a developer thing. I think with reviews, I think specifically review scores is kind of the big thing for consumers.
Yeah, that's true.
Because... And I feel like the problem with that, and I was actually discussing in the comments section of that article, that the problem is, you know, the consumer, instead of reading the entire review, because, you know, a reviewer could write this, you know, huge, like, 1,500-word, like, review explaining how they feel about the game and the ups and downs and everything, so you give a context to that score at the bottom, the consumer will either like scroll down or they'll just go to Metacritic and they'll just look at the score by itself and then they'll just kind of judge the game based on that one little score, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think it's gotten to a point where people, and you know, this is also because reviewers, I think, they have this tendency to not use the 1 to 10 score properly. So a game that's a 7.5 or an 8 is like a bad game. Like only games that are 9.0 and above are good, which is why you get those flame wars about people arguing about if you gave like Legend of Zelda like an 8.5 instead of a 10 or something.
That's generous.
Yeah.
8.5.
That's
what it is. Yeah. Should have been an 8.4.
And I feel like that's the problem with me with reviews because, you know, yeah, I think in general reviews, they're there to provide a service for consumers so you know if a game if a game is truly very poorly done and they're basically releasing it just to make a quick buck, I think they come in handy then. However, I think when people take too much stock in that score and they don't want to actually venture out and buy games like, that they probably would like, or otherwise, you know, actually not bad games at all, but, you know, may not have that, like, 9 or above kind of score.
Yeah, the score of a game is, it's two things. It's what one person thinks of the game, and it's also kind of like a snapshot of that game at that time when it was played.
Exactly.
You know, like, that's the one thing I've seen a lot of is, you know, when there's kind of like bickering and arguments about these games, it's like, you know, like how could you not like it? It got nines and tens across the board. And like, kind of like what Giuseppe was like mentioned in his article is you have to decide like which game is good or bad for you. Just became it's a 9 doesn't mean it's going to be a 9 for anybody else.
Yeah. I mean, take a game like take the Civilization games, always critically acclaimed, but you know, if you're not into those type of turn-based strategy games, the game, it's just you're gonna be completely turned off, and those nines are gonna be meaningless to you if that's not your thing.
Yeah, that's what I was just gonna say. It's really interesting. First off, I love Kamiya. Him and Itagaki are two of my absolute favorite developers. And it's really strange to hear, you know, him be the one to come forward and say that, because while most of Platinum's games have been critically acclaimed, most of them flop when it comes to sales.
Yeah.
You know? And I definitely agree that everyone should form their own, like you guys said, their own opinion on it, but not every game has a demo. So now you have a situation where you have, you know, games are, they're coming out $60, $50. And if you want to, you can watch videos, you can read reviews, but if you really want to try it for yourself, you're going to have to put the cash down, and it's kind of asking a lot for to take a chance.
Well, that's when a review has its value, and like, and always in my opinion, I always thought a review is always meant to be used as a buying guide and not something to kind of like validate your already existing opinion on a game.
Exactly,
and
I saw
that a lot with like the whole Dragon's Crown controversy. Like, do I think someone generally can play a game and not like it and then put that in as a review? That's fine. And but then I saw a lot of discussion, well, this game deserves a 9 point something. I'm like, that's not – you already own this game. Why does it matter to you whether it got a 9 or a 10 or an 8? Like, you know, there's some people who already go in there like Saints Row 4. I'm going to buy that game. I don't care what the review score is it's going to be for that game. I'm going to buy it.
Yep.
I'm going to buy it. So it really does not matter to me whether it gets a 5, which is – when you think about – a 5 is an average score. A 5 is really not supposed to be that shitty of a score. but somehow, according to Messenger Boards, anything below an 8 is don't even look at this game.
That's exactly the problem.
Which is such a terrible shame, because you'll miss out on really great kind of niche titles. Like, take something like the New Dynasty Wars, which I think is a really good game.
It's fun.
The review, you know, the spread on the review, it's maybe like, you know, it's probably, you probably make it like, you know, a 6 or a 7. If you Metacritic it, or maybe in the high 8s. But yeah, there's some people who just by looking at that won't even touch the game.
Yeah.
Which is sad when you think about it.
There's a few things I think are at play here, because like Alyssa said, you know, sometimes it's just it's not necessarily the score, but, you know, definitely what's said in there. You know, like there definitely have been games where I said, you know, I played that and I thought it was worth a 9, but it was given a 7, and then the reviewers say, well, if you're into this superhero genre or anime genre, it might be worth more points to you or something. I think another issue, though, like, you know, as a journalist, you know, I do think review scores and reviews themselves are important, you know, because that's the whole reason why we write them. But I think one of the worst things that has been happening lately, I think, is a huge trend the last year, is that there's been a lot of reviewers who have been trying to make some kind of statement with their reviews. You know, they see a game is getting like 9s across the board, and they want to make sure their review stands out for why they think one little thing about the game is bad. They'll give it a 7 or a 6 and say, well, I hated this one thing. I loved everything else, but I did this one thing. Everyone, like, gets pissed off, read it, but they're still reading it. You know, even if you don't agree with the score, the reviewer now has got, like, a million people wondering why he gave The Last of Us a 6 or Dragon's Crown a 7 because of boobies instead of, you know, the gameplay.
Yeah.
And all this controversy. So there's all these people, you know, I won't say any names, but there's definitely been a lot of big ones lately. Dave and I have discussed them like crazy, where they're definitely just making a statement like, you know, I want to prove that this game is sexist, or I want to prove this game is racist. So I'm going to give it a low score, even though it's really good, and there's only one character that I hate, and then bam, bam, bam. You know, but the one thing that I try to do when I've been reading reviews for years is that it's not only about what type of game you like and that this genre is niche for you, but also what the reviewer is like. You know, sometimes when I look up a game, like I used to go on IGN and I'll say, well, I don't like IGN's reviews as much. Like, theirs don't match my opinions. But then I'd go on Game Informer and I used to find their reviews would work a lot better for me. Like, they gave Split Second an 8 when I bought that game and I really enjoyed it, whereas IGN gave it like a 6 or a 7 for like different reasons. So I said, well, Game Informer matches for me. That's going to be my publisher of choice when it comes to reviews, you know? I think right now Metacritic has worked badly in favor of games because it's putting all these opinions together without the context of their opinions. And on top of that, they weigh the scores, you know, which doesn't help either, because then if IGN doesn't match your opinion, but it's getting 2 times worth the power of, you know, a smaller site, you know, that's going to, you know, skew the game's score by far, you know, so.
That's always been my problem with just the numerical rating system or like the 5-star rating system. It's just that like when you're reviewing a game, it's a very subjective experience.
Yes.
Where the opinions are going to be so varied for different people, and it's not the same review scale as you would say you're reviewing a car. It's like, okay, does the car turn on? Do the brakes work? And like you can't not all games work by going down a checklist. And I think that's the problem. Like I would prefer not having numbers at all and just force people to read. Like, because then you can read that bad dragon or what you think is the bad Dragon's Crown review and compare it to an opinion you agree. And without that number, you know what? You're forced to read them both and actually maybe have a dialogue. But I think
people
get way too hung up on .5s and, oh, but this one got an 8, or, well, this one didn't score as high as Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. I hate that. That's like a personal thing of mine. I hate when people compare something to, oh, but it's not like Grand Theft Auto 3, which got a 10 everywhere. I'm like, yeah, it's got a 10 7 years ago. You play that game again, you're going to want to throw it out a window.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a big Grand Theft Auto 3 fan.
How did that happen though? That was like, I'm about to become one of those people, but it's like, damn, we were all playing that. What happened?
No, you know, it was new. It was kind of like an open world, the first big open world game on, I guess at the time it was a next gen console.
Yeah,
it was like, holy shit, they can do this. And I think I think collectively we all just kind of got floored by it. Like this could happen in a video game. And at the time, and I'm not saying those tens at the time were not warranted. I'm like, hey, you know what? If I was playing that game for the very first time, I don't think I ever finished Grand Theft Auto 3, just because sometimes those open world games, you just forget what to do.
Well, especially that one, because I remember like when my friends first bought it, the whole discussion was not that it was open world, but oh my god, you can just like walk up to a dude and just like shoot him in the face and then drive over him.
That's crazy.
Like, really? You can do that in a video game? Oh, shit. And then, of course, we all bought it.
I think, Jorge, you mentioned you make a good point about like why the game review system is much different from other review systems. You look at a story, like you read a book or you watch a movie, you pretty much have that story. I mean, every now and then you get a jump in technology like 3D or something like that, but for the most part, there's not a huge difference. You know, literature never changes. Movies change like once every like 50 years or something. Not much changes. Games are constantly changing with technology, and then we do base some of that review on the technology, you know. So I didn't even think about that until now, but that does make the game review experience much different from its peers, because there is a certain amount of like awe, you know, when a game can do something that other games couldn't do at the time. And then when you play it again years later, you're like, well, the game may not have been that great by itself, but because it was able to do this thing nobody else could do, that's pretty awesome. Now, Grand Theft Auto 3 compared to Grand Theft Auto 5 or whatever, you know, of course it's going to be different, you know, but even that narrative experience is different because of the way games, you know, they have so much range with how they can paint a story or paint an experience, you know, so that's it's another reason why that score thing is a little tricky.
Yeah, and don't forget
that's why reviewers need to keep their fanboy in check when they're reviewing something.
That's to be fair, that it could be really tough sometimes.
I know it can be tough. I mean, I've been in that position before. You know, like when I was, I guess, quote unquote, a little more small time before I came to Dual Shockers, I read a review on. Wait, what?
Before you made it big.
Yeah, before I made it big.
Eating caviar.
I know. Oh, God. You know, before I had the cocaine and strippers. I wrote a review on Mass Effect 3, and I was reading, and then that was like a hugely anticipated game of mine.
Was that on Infinite Ammo?
Yeah, yeah. I remember reading the reviews, and I'm like, how did some of the... I mean, I'm like, some of the guys who wrote their reviews on this game were obviously huge fans of the franchise, because you could tell in the review. And then they would say, but the ending left me with no questions whatsoever. I got complete closure. I'm like, all right, hold on a second.
This is going to turn into a big Mass Effect 3 ending discussion, because I was in that same position. I had an early copy of the game, so I played it through for review. I had no issue with the ending. At the time, I was just like, you know, this is the story they want to tell. Was I disappointed? Yeah, but I wasn't going to put that, because I felt that was getting a little bit into, like, spoilerish territory, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, by the way, you're going to fucking hate this ending.
Another thing, and I think Jorge mentioned it,
because I feel like Yeah, because I feel like that would just diminish the whole kind of experience from, like, I feel like that took away too much from the game or someone saying, like, because I feel like people should play Mass Effect 3. Or if, like, if you played 1 and 2, you need to play 3.
Yeah, yeah.
And to tell them, like, the ending's really bad, it's not going to validate anything you did for the trilogy, that's well, heavy.
I'm not advocating that, but I was just honest and I said, you know, look, does it fall short in some places, especially at a crucial moment? For me, it did, yeah. But, you know, but then I kind of drove the point home. 99% of the game is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just this one thing. I'm like, look, the Sopranos is a great show. Is it retroactively ruined by the ending that everyone hated? No. So the same thing wasn't with Mass Effect 3. But I was at least honest with the readers, and I didn't let the fact that I loved the rest of the game, you know, skew my review when I wrote it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and going back to what Jorge was saying, about...
Or George, you can call me George.
Yeah, I'm sorry, George.
No, it's my fault. I keep tricking everybody.
He mentioned how, you know, a lot of gamers or fanboys or whatever use the reviews and sales in their arguments, which about, you know, this game is good because this game got good reviews, or this game sucks because nobody bought it, you know, as objective points in their arguments. But while obviously sales cannot really... I mean... I guess it depends on the situation, because you want to say if you feel like a game is good and it sells well, then in that situation, sales are an indicator of quality, whereas copy and paste, Warfare, whatever, sells a million bazillion copies. And
I feel like there's some games, don't you feel like there's some games that are just kind of like above reviews? Like, I feel like regardless of what we say about Call of Duty, it is always going to sell a bajillion copies.
Yeah. And sales, I have to disagree with you slightly, Ken, unless you're making a different point, but sales just mean the game sold a lot. Like
that, yeah, I was saying, like, I don't feel that it is necessarily an indicator of quality.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry.
At all. In no situation, but people are... Well, I guess the fanboys are going to reach for that every time. Yeah, whatever, you like crappy little Dragon's Crown. Nobody bought that. You know what I'm saying? Whereas I'm playing whatever shooter part 50 and everyone bought it, so it must be awesome. Or everyone gave a good review, so it must be awesome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just pretend like those people don't exist.
It's just that there's so many of them, though.
You got to treat them like children. Anyone under the age of 18, their opinion does not matter because they are not an adult. Yeah. Just like
all
that.
The reasons you guys have mentioned up until this point, it's hard to ignore either sales or reviews altogether. Though I do feel, like Kamiya said, that maybe we pay too much attention to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to disregard them altogether.
I think we do. When that, I mean, if you really kind of like lurk in message boards, and especially a place like N4G, which is kind of like, you know, a conglomeration of every review everywhere.
Can we not mention the Demon Spawn?
You're going to find at least one or two at least two or three people arguing sales. Like that indicates anything regarding quality. It doesn't indicate shit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I just want to make one more point. It was going back to something Masood said. It was in terms of, you know, how we were talking about how reviews are very, very dependent on the time period in which they were actually written.
Yes.
And you guys were saying, you were making the point how, in some cases, you know, you can get a game will get amazing reviews because it was an amazing game that didn't do things at the time, but then you look back and you're like, oh my god. I think it can go the opposite way too, because this other magazine that I read, EGM, Electronic Gaming Monthly, they did something interesting when they would actually look back at old reviews they did for games. Like they looked back at Tetris. And, you know, everyone loves Tetris. We can appreciate what it is, like, especially now. You can go back to it. It's an absolute classic. Back then, they gave Tetris, like, a 6, a 5. Like, same thing when the Game Boy first came out, like, that portable system. And they gave, like, a really – the guy talking about it gave it a low score, saying how it just looked – games on it look awful. It's not going to last, you know.
The Game Boy was the size of a brick. You could probably knock somebody out with it. I can't really hold that against them.
Yeah, so it's just funny when you look at that. Like, back then, people didn't really, like, certain things, like, you know, now were really, like, you know, innovative and really changed the industry in some way. But then back then, people who were looking at it at that point were just kind of like, oh, well, I don't really see how this is going to do anything. So, yeah, I think in that way, too, reviews can be very dependent on the time period.
Mm-hmm. You guys remember trying to stuff a Game Boy into your jeans? I mean, I'm lucky yeah. that, I'm lucky baggy pants were in style in the 90s, because if not, like, there's no way you're hiding that in school.
Well, that's why it was great for the Game Boy Pocket. The Game Boy Pockets, like, saved my life. And like,
oh, yeah.
Remember the Game Boy Micros? Those were amazing.
Oh, I have one.
Yeah, I think I got, like, a camo one somewhere in my house, but, yeah, that was awesome.
Aren't those pretty rare now? Oh, I think those are, like, collector's items.
Yeah. Well, not mine. Mine's got, like, stickers and possibly residue of some sort of drug on it, but
all right, so I think we're gonna move on. I'm actually gonna skip ahead to one other topic. The Xbox One. Our favorite topic here at Dual Shockers. So actually recently came out in the news that they were going to repeal that one last bullet point from their initial announcement, which was of one of our writers, Dana, referred to as the Kinect sensor that would turn into a Decepticon and go through your underwear while you weren't home.
Oh.
It was basically just a joke that the camera was always on, blah, blah, blah. So from what I understand, that it's not going to have to be always on anymore. So you got that, and you got everything else that they've gone back on. Is anyone here sold on the Xbox One yet?
No.
Am I crazy to think that is really news?
No.
You're not sold.
Not yet.
No way. I think it's really interesting to see how they're flip-flopping on everything, and I think the next imminent announcement at this rate would have to be, here is your $400 SKD without Kinect. And mm-hmm. at that point, maybe I would consider it, but I don't know, and I can't. You gotta feel like all of this cannot be good for how people are viewing Microsoft and this console in general, because maybe there was someone who was excited about Always Online, or maybe there was someone who was excited about having to use Kinect.
They're out there, Ken. They're out there. Trust me.
And now these people are like, "Oh my God, I get to play without Kinect. Like, this is terrible, and I don't have to be on the internet all the time." You know, so you have those people like, "I don't trust you anymore." And then obviously the people who decided from Jump Street, like, "Yeah, I don't care what they announce. I'm not coming anywhere near that." And so everyone is just kind of like, "What's going to happen now?"
I'm actually a little impressed. You know, I'm still not going to get an Xbox because I do have a little bit of fanboyism.
Good job, guys. I'm not going to buy it, but great job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They get a gold star.
As a Sony fanboy from the PS1 era, like, I give them a lot of, I applaud them on their ability to very quickly, you know, at least in a relative time scale, to take back everything that they're hearing everybody say, "I hate you" for, and, you know, switch on it. And, you know, these are things that they usually discuss with, you know, like, I don't know, their board of directors or whatever, and their head tech people. And clearly they all believed in it, like, by far, by the beginning of the summer, they were like, "Yeah, fuck yeah, everybody's going to love Always Online." And then, you know, a minute after they released this information, it's like, "Yeah, the whole internet hates us." I mean, I don't know if it's definitely that great, because then I guess, you know, business-wise, you'd have to make the decision, like, well, we need customers, but I do at least give them credit for not, you know, sticking it, you know, digging their heels in the ground and saying, "Well, we're going to stick by this, and we know we're right," you know, because the customer is usually always right.
Yeah, unless you work in retail, then you know the customers are actually not right most of the time.
No, yeah, that's true, but but, you know, I give them credit for that. I still don't want an Xbox, because I know that they're, from the get-go and even now, they still want it to be related to your TV, and I'm never on my TV. I don't give a shit about cable or any of that crap. I'm on YouTube, which, you know, that's all I need. PlayStation has that app. You know, Xbox has that app. I have that. I don't want to pay extra for it either with Xbox Live. I like that, you know, Sony has their, you know, their online multiplayer for gaming you pay for, but all the apps and other crap, you know, is free, even if you have an online game that's free to play. I don't really see Xbox doing anything for me, even if they drop it down to $400, you know?
Yes, that's another thing. They were, the whole image of, "We are so multimedia, like, this is not about games, this is about TV, this is about Skype," you know, that whole image, I think that is I don't think that's gone away. You know,
you
know,
you gotta pay.
People are still like, oh, it's still the $500 cable box, even after all of these.
Plus Xbox Live Gold. That's the other thing. It's like, if you put a gun to my head, you said PS4, Xbox One. It's like, well, with one, I'm gonna pay less just for the console, and then I'm also gonna pay less because I won't have to buy a subscription to watch Netflix. You know, like right now, since I'm without a PS3, I was using my PS3 for Netflix. Now it's between my Xbox and my Wii U, and I let my gold run out on the Xbox, so I can only watch Netflix on the Wii U now. Like, they really want me to pay $60 to watch that. I'm like, no, I'll use the Wii U. And same thing, I'll use a PS4 for that stuff. Like, that's the other thing. It's like, they're so innovative, but you got to pay for services that, you know, you haven't had to pay for on the PlayStation Network. Yep.
For me, it's just really the price. Like, $500 is still a little too steep for me. I know that I don't really know if they're going to even think of ever doing it, but if they released a version of the Kinect and it made it drop 100, then, you know, okay, I might consider it, but not right now when the PlayStation 4 is $100 cheaper. Like you said, you can still use Netflix and whatever without PlayStation Plus, you know, it just, it seems like a lot of value at this point.
Yes.
I mean, you are going to have to pay, if you want to play multiplayer on PS4, you are going to have to pay for PS Plus.
Yeah, no, but, that's the problem.
Unless it's a free-to-play game. If it's a free-to-play game, like, I don't know, I can't even think of one off the top of my head. If it's free-to-play, you don't have to pay for it online.
Like a DC Universe.
Yeah, unless the publisher wants to do it.
Huh? Yeah, PlayStation Network has been offering a spectacular value for the money, so I don't think most people would mind parting with, you know, the little change for the subscription to PlayStation Plus, like, seriously.
Yeah, I think people are okay with paying for online as long as the service works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, anyone who's been on an Xbox has already been kind of used to it. So it's like, you can imagine those people going from, like, an Xbox to a PS4. It's like, hey, where's my cross-game chat? It's like, oh, no, you don't get that. It's like, but why? And no, I guess I'm the only person who, like, I'm not super excited about an Xbox One, but I will get one. Do I want to get one at launch? No, but I figure I might have to review games on it and you know, be somewhat up to date on shit.
No, I eventually will pick it up, but it's not. There's no like sense of immediacy for it.
Absolutely,
it's like,
not.
I'm not gonna feel like I'm missing out if I don't get it on launch. I'll wait until the price drops. I'll wait until it's, you know, it's on secondhand market or something like that, but like otherwise I don't really feel obliged to buy it. A lot of the games I'm interested in are on both platforms anyway, so might as well go with the one that's cheaper and, you know, one that doesn't have a camera that spies on me. And well, actually, I won't be doing that anymore, but still.
Yeah. The one thing, though, that, you know, it's just weird to me, like even months later, that I had more faith in Microsoft before. Like, even though I was a Sony fanboy, there's a whole part of the PS3s around where I was like, Sony, what the hell are you doing, you know?
Yeah.
And then Microsoft, you know, they were doing all these things that, like, won over gamers. Gamers have basically been, like, drooling over everything Microsoft does. And I was like, it's for good reason. They seem like they know what the consumer wants. The Xbox One comes out, and it's, like, anti-Xbox 360 in every way, you know? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. So then, they didn't even have the headset in up until recently, you know? And it's like, one of the only reasons why Sony has such a head start on Microsoft is because Microsoft's been fucking up every single step of the way. And then Sony says, well, you know, guess what we're doing? And then Microsoft has to, like, copy them to look like they're doing anything. So now Microsoft is constantly behind the PS4 trying to prove itself.
Yeah.
And these are all things that I thought Microsoft knew already from the last generation. It's like they totally swapped places, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah,
I think
who doesn't include headsets, you know? Like, I know the Kinect is expensive, but it's a headset, you know? Like, even Sony's giving you these little crappy little earbuds, but they're earbuds, you know? Like, they're something that you can plug into your controller. Microsoft made the headset popular, you know?
Yeah.
I don't necessarily find this whole thing bad. Like, this whole Microsoft is, it's weird seeing Microsoft pretty much playing, us too, as far as like headsets and just like other features as compared to the PS4. I think this is actually good on both ends, because Microsoft could have took that really hard line stance that we thought they were going to take and be like, oh yeah, PS4's got a headset? Yeah,
deal
so
with
what?
It. Yeah.
Yeah, like, fuck you, who cares? Always online, you know what? Move to a place that has internet. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, like, they did say that.
Weren't they kind of like
that? Just remember that they very much, you know, had that guy say, hey, well, screw all you people who don't have it. We have an Xbox 360.
Who's no longer at the company anymore. He's at Zynga.
Yeah, well, after they fucked up and the whole internet went crazy about it. You know?
Yeah, that's the thing. The initial reveal was so overwhelming. Like, the first thing, it was just like, boom. You know, atomic bomb. And the after effects of that are ongoing. You know, yeah. Almost like it doesn't matter what they do, people are still going to be like, I don't know, TV, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I have a question for you guys. Do you think, like, what do you think, as far as, like, longevity for the Xbox One would be? Do you still think, as a competing system, does it have a future?
Yes.
They're making, yeah, right? As long as Halo's on the console, they're going to get, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, because, I mean, in the end, as far as how many dumb TV features it has, or, you know, ooh, you can do Skype while you're, you know, in the bathroom, and you can yell across your room, and everyone can watch you. I don't think that really matters, as long as I have, like, half a dozen games I want to play within that first year.
When it comes out, it's going to do fine. I mean, Sony survived, like, how many things with the PS3 this last generation? They, you know, yeah, being behind the hacking, you know, just the games that were being ported with shittier quality. Yeah. And by the end of the console generation, it not only caught up, it surpassed a little in sales, and they're doing fine. Xbox One is going to be fine in, like, a year or two. They do have some pretty good games in their lineup. It's just this initial part right now might shake, you know, a gamer, you know, to, like... Again, I think they've done a phenomenal job with, like, saying, hey, you know, we messed up and now we're listening to you. But again, every time they mess up and do the same thing all over again, it's like, how many times do I have to see you guys, you know, trip over yourselves, you know? Like,
that's the thing I'm always asking myself, though. Like, yeah, you know, they're listening to the consumer now and they're, you know, repealing these policies that people hated. But what was going through their fucking head prior to that?
In the first place, right?
Yeah, like, what made them say, oh my god, like, we're just gonna ether all these motherfuckers, like, this is amazing, they're gonna love it, like,
it was arrogance. I think it was kind of, yeah, like, pure arrogance. Yep. You know, I thought they have a lot of good ideas, but I'm like, I don't think people are that super excited about TV integration, or, like, you know, the whole online-only concept seemed really interesting, but I don't think we're there yet. I mean, if they said this maybe 3-4 years from now on, like, some new weird console, it's like, yeah, it's always going to be online, always digital. I think people would have been more excited, but I don't think, like, the broadband infrastructure in this country is not there yet. So that's why it scared people away, where it's like, whoa, what do you mean I got to connect this every, like, 20 minutes? That's nuts. And, you know, yeah, I had really weird kind of, like, Dreamcast vibes when the Xbox One was coming out. Oh, and I was just like, yeah, because remember, the Dreamcast, like, hey, we've got a fucking modem, even though there wasn't a game... Yeah. Yeah, there wasn't a game that actually used it for, like, 3 or 4 years down the road.
Yeah.
Which, you know, Fancy Star Online,
What I think, like, really messed with them this generation was that I think both Sony and Microsoft were guilty of this. They both were trying to make up for their shortcomings the last time. Like, every time they've done these little, like, you know, I don't know, polls or whatever, they've noticed that Sony has way more people who use it for streaming and checking out stuff than they do gaming, and then vice versa with Microsoft. With Xbox 360, everyone's gaming but not really watching anything. So I think Microsoft is, you know, they said, hey, everyone plays our games. We have the whole internet behind us on multiplayer. Let's put as much as we can into winning over the TV and streaming people, and then this way we'll have both, you know, realms under our belt. And Sony has been winning back gamers already with the PS3, and now they've really went hard on it for next generation, trying to prove they can do all genres. But, you know, for Microsoft, they fell short on that end. And then we don't know how Sony's going to be right now because everyone's looking at Microsoft. But Microsoft tried to put all their, you know, eggs in one basket for TV to prove they can do that. And really, gamers might stream more on the PS3, but I don't think we really care about that. We don't really go around saying, like, yeah, my PS3 has Crunchyroll and Neon Alley and YouTube and you know, it's not about all that. You know, we just like that it's there.
Well, the funny part is, yeah, a bunch of people are watching TV all day, every day. But you know what they're not doing? Playing video games. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't you want more people to actually buy games on your system? It's like, yeah, great, you're watching TV on it. That's awesome. Can you go buy Assassin's Creed now, please?
And that's another thing.
And I'm not sure. I'll just throw this in there, too, really quick. I'm sorry, Ken. We don't know, I think, I don't really remember the polls, but we don't really know the percentage, you know, like the ratio of gaming to, like, we don't know if that's, like, for instance, when I'm at home, my PS3 is almost constantly on, and so yes, I am going to be gaming, but then when I'm not gaming, when I'm, like, you know, writing for the site, or when I'm, like, on Facebook or some crap, I have my streaming services on. Right. We don't know maybe if the reason why people are streaming more is just because they leave their console on and it's just on in the background, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
So you think there's some sort of metric out there saying, like, you know, that Microsoft maybe is like, look, there's a lot of people watching TV than you think. Let's go for this.
Yeah, I don't know. Because I don't remember what the different ways that they've done these polls, but that could be a reason why they thought there are so many people who really want TV and streaming service is because, you know, we leave our shit on all the time. You know, maybe we just left it on, you know? Like, I like the game like crazy, but I can't game and write for the site at the same time, so I'd rather put on something to stream, you know?
I would also have to say, it could be a little depressing if you look at the current lineup for the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360, because I'm not seeing a whole bunch of, you know, must-have exclusives for the 360, not this year, and this has been going on, I feel like, for quite some time. And you have all these really, really exciting, really hot games coming off of PlayStation 3. You know, The Last of Us, you've got Beyond later this year, Final Fantasy Remake, the Dragon's Crown, you know, Kingdom Hearts, the list goes on. You have all of these games coming to PlayStation 3 this year, and I feel like Microsoft has the 360 exclusive list has really been lacking, I think.
Gears of War, Halo, Forza.
And if Endgame is going to be anything like this for PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, then because I think you also have people who are thinking like that, because that's kind of been on my mind. Like, are they really going to have a bunch of exclusives, or are they going to do the two or three noteworthy exclusives a year? Or
yeah, Horizon and Quantum Break, they feel like one-offs. They don't feel like franchises
Yeah. You have Dead Rising 3, I believe, is a launch title for the Xbox One.
It is,
One.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's got its, like, fervent fan base.
That's one in a row for the Xbox One.
Hey, man. No,
I wanted to bring up a point, too, with the... I mean, I was wondering about this, and if you guys feel I'm wrong, you know, feel free to jump in. But in terms of the PlayStation 4 with the games that they're getting, I know they have, like, a couple exclusives. Like, how many did it have again, if anyone remembers?
Infamous. Second Son.
It's kind of hard to figure out because Sony's been saying they have so many people developing stuff that we know there's a lot of maybes out there.
Yeah,
I don't really remember the confirmed right now.
And they haven't really specified launch titles, right? As far as first party launch titles, they haven't really said it.
That's what I was thinking too. And the thing is with me, because I know Sony said something like how they're not going to fully switch for the PlayStation 4 until, like, 2014, right? Like, sometime late in that year. So what I was wondering is, meanwhile, you know, they have a lot of great games, like, coming out for the PlayStation 3. They have a couple exclusives for their PlayStation 4. So I'm wondering, you know, what incentives, I guess, other than the launch titles, what incentives are they giving people to purchase a PlayStation 4 when it first comes out? Because I feel like, for me at least, I could just kind of still keep my PlayStation 3 and not bother buying a PlayStation 4 until, like, you know, when you really start getting the deep support for it and games that you're not seeing. I mean, even Final Fantasy 14, like, they announced a PlayStation 4 port, but I'm like, I can just play on PlayStation 3.
Yeah.
So I was wondering about that.
I think that's a debacle that everyone goes through whenever a new console launches. The lineup is, you know, there's might be a couple of gems here and there, but I mean, there's a lot of people that are no matter what system it's been, you know, Dreamcast, PS2, PS3, people have been okay with kind of waiting a little bit.
Something I think is smart on Microsoft's side, if the game turns out to be good, is Project Spark. I really thought that was one of their, like, best looking games from their lineup, and taking a cue from Little Big Planet on Sony's side. If you really can make, like, a whole crap load of different types of games and they look good and they play well, that could be, you know, your Little Big Planet of Microsoft, you know, and if you do get an early, you know, if you do get an early, like, you know, the day one system or a few months afterward, that could be the thing where, you know, people will dig in, have fun for a while, and might feel incentive to, like, get the game, get the console early. if not that, then like Elise said, everything else is pretty much, you know, accessible on other consoles and stuff. I mean, you do see some graphical differences.
Yeah.
Supposedly, Watch Dogs is, you know, Watch Dogs looks much different. Is that Nino?
Yeah, that's my dog.
Does he not like Watch Dogs?
He's like, I ain't buying an Xbox One on launch. You can go fuck yourself. Yeah. Sorry, guys.
But yeah, I mean, you have, you know, like, there are some things I'm interested in seeing when the launch titles come out. Like, I think one of the developers of Watch Dogs went on record to saying that the Xbox might have a better version because they have, they're going to have the cloud computing that can do some of the things and blah, blah, blah. I think Mark Cerny, I don't remember how to say his name.
I think it's Cerny.
I think Mark Cerny said that he doesn't think that's going to like factor in, but we're not going to see until it comes out. But once we see like the differences and how the power really comes out, that might make the difference with how soon people want to get new consoles.
Yep. Yeah.
I wish they would elaborate on what the cloud does for them.
It's the cloud. That's all
everything.
You have to know. It's just the cloud.
It's like we do back end Kamiya. Yeah. We do back end computing on the cloud. And I'm like, I don't know what that means. Stop saying that.
The cloud is the next gen excuse, George. So it's like, well, what about this? Well, this, it's the cloud, dude. Okay, no, but I want to know why my character's falling through the floor. It's the cloud.
Well, that might be why they want always online, because if their games are only stronger with the cloud computing, you know, when their game is off, it's not going to be nearly as powerful. So that might be one reason why they want people to always be online. You know, because if the cloud computing is handling all the heavy-duty stuff, you know, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing, you know, that might be the future of gaming, you know, once everyone gets their, you know, their nice connection going, but that might be why they're so scared of not doing, you know, offline gaming. You know, the Xbox One might suck without cloud computing, who knows, you know?
Well, there's still a lot of convincing to do, especially with, with this group of people. but yeah, we had some other topics, but we're running out of time, so we'll get to them on the next show. But I guess right now we're going to find out what you guys are playing this week. Alyssa, what are you playing?
I'm actually still playing Pikmin 3.
I think no one's going to hold that against you.
It's awesome. I can't get enough of it.
Sending those poor Pikmin to their deaths, all for fruit and cherries. George, what are you playing?
Oh, me?
Yes.
I'm a little confused. I go by two names.
George Hay?
What have I been playing? I think, like you, I've been playing a lot of Papers, Please.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Just kind of re-falling in love with that game. and then feeling like the most terrible person ever because I admitted I let one guy into into the country, but then I denied his wife.
Oh, that couple. Oh! Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know what? If she don't got the right paperwork, she can't come in,
all
right?
How do you not figure this out beforehand? Come on, yeah.
What do you mean you need an ID? I'm like, don't you talk to your husband? How does he have all this paperwork and not you? And then she's like, you just sentenced me to death. I'm like, look, now you're just being dramatic. Just leave my line. Next. And then I let the next guy through, and he's a suicide bomber, and I lose pay for the day, and my kids die.
Yeah.
That game sounds nuts.
It's crazy.
It's so nuts, and it's so minimalistic, too. It's like a 16-bit game, but it's really, really good.
It's a great, great game.
Yeah.
And I don't want to admit this, but I will, but I've been playing DC Universe.
Oh, God.
Why? I could not tell you why. I just kind of was jonesing for it. I think I've been reading too many comic books, and I was like, oh, I'll make a superhero again. So I made a guy named Gruff Lightning.
You know,
who flies and saps people.
Gruff Lightning?
Yeah, man.
If you played Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe, I think you'd get a more positive reaction.
Oh my god, I hate that game.
Yeah, I wasn't crazy about it. I felt like super insulted playing that game, and it was like, once everyone's we get mad, rage, and our eyes turn yellow. I'm like, really? That's all we can do with the Mortal Kombat and DC licenses.
Heroic brutality.
Yeah, they get mad. Alright, great. Mortals, Lightning's great. And I'm probably going to try some Payday tonight if someone gives me a code. But if not, I might actually get it on PC because I played the beta over the weekend and having fun. AI is a little screwy, so I kind of want to see what the final build looks like.
Right. Ken, what are you playing? Ken?
Well, Mario and Luigi, which is it's pretty fun. I really want to play Dragon's Crown. I got it for the Vita, but I haven't got a chance to play it yet. And Valkyria Chronicles, but mostly Mario and Luigi.
Awesome.
It's a pretty, the dialogue and stuff is pretty funny. I haven't played a bunch of these Mario RPGs before. I played a little bit of Paper Mario. So it's kind of new to me, kind of not. I like how they mix in the real-time elements with the turn-based combat, so you kind of have to pay attention and stuff like that. And it's its own thing.
That's cool.
So how you like Valkyria Chronicles?
Valkyria Chronicles is really fun. First of all, the art is crazy. And I'm pretty much a turn-based strategy fan, so... And I like the characters. The story is pretty interesting to this point. It's probably the most anime-like game I've played yet, and I have played a bunch of anime-like games. So it's really, really fun. I almost bought the big art book the other day, the big 400-page one, but it's a bit high.
Masood, what are you playing?
I'm going to do a Giuseppe and say I was playing three games. Ken talking about Valkyria Chronicles made me like start coming back to it myself. I told Ken this before. I love the game, but I never finished it like many of the other ones in my collection. So I started playing that over, and then I started playing Stealth Bastard, which on the Vita is Stealth Inc., A Clone in the Dark. And that game, I kind of want to do a late review for it. I feel bad that we never axed them for it. But it's incredibly good. Like, they said they wanted to do a stealth action game, and it falls into that line of, like, 2D platformer, like, you know, all the great ones of the past, and sort of that Portal type of thing to it, where you have to experiment and, you know, possibly die a million times before you, like, finish something properly. Really good stuff. You know, it has its own, like, GLaDOS type of humor, you know, in it when you, like, mess up a lot. Fantastic game on the Vita. It's part of the cross-buy. I would recommend it to anyone listening or any of you guys. And then finally, I'm playing Saints Row 4, which we got super early, because I think the game comes out on the 20th, and we got it, like, you know, like the end of last week. So I'm playing that right now to review it.
That's
and surprise...
When they give
huh?
That's always a good sign for me, when they're willing to give you a super early review copy.
Oh, definitely.
That shows
yeah.
a lot of confidence in their game, you know.
And you know, Dave and I played this at E3, and we played the superpower portion of it, and, you know, like, after you've gotten leveled up a bit, and there really wasn't any context for it, so, you know, we both enjoyed our time, but we had, like, this weird feeling about, like, whether you can do this, like, you know, for hours on end. Because Saints Row did have those moments where you might feel like, well, I've been doing the same thing over and over again, or, you know, the fun runs out. But I do have to say that the superpowers added on and all that stuff, I fucking love it. There are a few things that I'm, like, you know, being annoyed about, like, as anything, but the game overall is, like, is much more fun than I thought it was going to be. It's definitely working for me. They took a big chance with making the Enter the Dominatrix DLC, like, the entire game, and I'm actually enjoying that they did that, because there's, like, a crazy amount of Matrix references. There's some Mass Effect references in there, since they're on a ship for part of the game. You actually get to romance your teammates, which include robots and Keith David, so that's kind of interesting. I mean, just a whole bunch of stuff that you can do. So I think it's going to be a good review. I'm not done with it yet, but I think it's good so far.
Yeah, I've been playing Papers, Please. Like George said, feeling like a terrible person. It's a challenging game, especially when the paperwork starts to pile up. Yeah, it's really, really good. I love the racism. yeah, I'm on... I don't even know if you can call it, like, a second playthrough. You can kind of branch off, make different choices, and it starts a whole different save for you. So this is, like, the third time that I've kind of branched off and tried something different. Because the objective is to make it a month while keeping your job. So I've gotten close, but I haven't finished it yet.
Also, feeding your family and paying rent.
And feeding your family. Well, I haven't had trouble with that yet, but it's the whole terrorism thing that, yeah, that's a pain in the ass. But all right, we're gonna end the podcast on that note. Very good show, guys. With me this evening was Alyssa James.
Bye, guys.
Kenneth Richardson.
See you later, dude.
George Jimenez.
You heard it here first. Terrorism is a pain in the ass.
And the suit house.
I don't know how to follow that up. Damn it, George.
And I'm doing my greatest.